Max Scherzer is heading to the Toronto Blue Jays. Does he have anything left in the tank? Yes, welcome on in to First Pitch for Friday, January 31st. Your source of news, notes, and updates on Major League Baseball. I'm your host, Lindsey Crosby. You can follow me on Twitter at Crosby Baseball. He's Troy Brock, Troy B Baseball on the Twitter machine. While you're going there, go subscribe to the show wherever you get your podcasts. Send your friends. FirstPitchPodcast.com brings you right to this playlist on YouTube. And Troy, a little bit of movement yesterday. This is really the show, other than Dylan Cease, who we're going to talk about, this is really the old man pitcher show today. And what old man pitcher that's better to start this off with than Max Scherzer, okay? 40-year-old Max Scherzer signs a one-year, $15.5 million deal with the Toronto Blue Jays. So those of you keeping keeping score at home, Justin Verlander, who was tied with Scherzer in AAV, got $15 million. Charlie Morton, who is older than both of these guys, got $15 million from the Orioles. Max Scherzer got $500,000 more than either of those guys to sign with Toronto. Right now, gun to your head, who's going to have the better 2025? Scherzer, Verlander, or Morton?
I think it's going to be Morton. And by the way, Morton is also he's in the middle. Justin Verlander's the oldest. Verlander's 42. Morton's 41.
That's right. I'm sorry. Verlander is the oldest one. Yep. You're right.
But you know, I think that Charlie Morton's honestly going to have the best year out of the three. I think Max Scherzer's going to have a good year. I don't think Justin Verlander's going to have a good year, but I think that Charlie Morton's year is going to be the best just because he's proven throughout the last since 2018. Yeah, and since 2018, I actually wrote about this yesterday on Sports Illustrated, that since 2018, he's made 30 or more starts in every season except for 2020, of course, because that was the COVID season of 60 games. So, and he's qualified for the ERA title in each of those seasons as well. And Max Scherzer over the last few years has not been able to do that, and neither is Justin Verlander. So, gun to my head, I think it's Charlie Morton, but I do still think Scherzer is going to have a better year than he did in 2024.
There you go. That year in 2024, he made 9 starts, 2-4, 3.95 ERA, 43 1/3 innings, 40 strikeouts. I kind of agree. Charlie Morton, because of the health, is probably going to have the best year of the three. Let's flip this just a little bit, though. If all three are healthy, who has the best performance? Scherzer, Verlander, or Morton?
I'm still going to give it to Morton just because Verlander, while he has dealt with injuries over the past couple of years, he hasn't really as much as Scherzer, and Verlander's really just struggled. It's like he's ran out of gas because he's, again, 42 years old. He's trying to pull a Jamie Moyer, and he's not doing a good job of it. And so I don't see Justin Verlander really having a good year. I mean, he is in a good place for pitching in San Francisco and pitching in Oracle Park, but I don't see him having a good year. I think he should have hung it up a couple years ago. I do think Scherzer, like I said, I think Scherzer's going to have a good year up there in Toronto in the Great White Yonder. But I still think Charlie Morton's going to be the best of the three.
See, I think I'm going to go with Verlander. I mean, he's 22. He won the Cy Young, 1.75 ERA, 18 wins. But he's the guy. Yes, he's a fly ball pitcher. Like, that's the problem. He had one of the lowest ground ball rates in the league last year, but he's also in a good park for that, right? He's also really, really good despite the stuff deteriorating. He didn't get the whiffs he wanted last year. He didn't get the strikeouts he normally gets last year in his starts, but he still didn't give a ton of hard hit balls, didn't give up a ton of barrels. So, like, it's usually when you're looking at a pitcher, and I'm thinking about StatCast here, and they're really poor at ground ball rate, they're usually also poor at barrel rate because they give up hard hit balls. And since they give up more fly balls than most people, those fly balls have a greater likelihood of being barrels. And Verlander, again, atrocious ground ball rate, like first percentile under like 30%. He was still above average at not allowing barrels. And even, and that's with the diminished stuff he had last year. His fastball velocity was below average. It was like 93.5 last year as he was working back from injury and all of that. I do think his park and the fact that he was able to get enough time on the field last year to really kind of figure out what went wrong and what didn't. I like Verlander, but I could see the argument for Morton like you had. And Scherzer's the one to me that kind of feels like, I mean, Scherzer's the one that feels like the biggest question to me because he looked the best of the best of the three on a short window last year, 395 ERA, but he only made 9 starts. He threw 43 innings. And it's like, how much can he really do, especially when his fastball got down into like averaging like 92, right? How much can he do if that fastball gets worse than what it already was? So it's a tough question. I wouldn't want to be banking on any one of these old guys.
No.
Very least. I do think it's funny that Scherzer did get the extra $500,000 over Verlander and Morton. That's just kind of, the dude's a competitor in every single respect, including contract negotiations. That's always funny. Another old guy, let's continue the old man slander today. Another old guy who's trying to get a job and reportedly is open to moving to closer is Lance Lynn. Atrocious 2023 for Lance Lynn, right? 13-11, 573 ERA. He actually wasn't as bad last year. 7-4, 384 ERA for the Cardinals in 23 starts. But now a free agent, the fastball sitting 92, but it's still graded out as above average pitch. There's a lot of blue on that Statcast, man. There's a lot of blue on Lance Lynn Statcast. Is Lance Lynn moving to a closing role? Is Lance Lynn as a closer enough to give him a couple more years in the league? Or does this kind of feels like he's cooked at age 37?
Yeah, no, especially with all the blue on the Statcast and the low fastball velo, I don't see Lance Lynn as a closer. He still has value as a starting pitcher, even though he had in 2024, he had a good year across 23 starts. 2023, he didn't, but he could still serve as a back of the rotation innings eater that can post 20 or more times a year and throw you 120 or more innings and serve in that role pretty well, as opposed to going into the bullpen and trying to be a closer. It's one of the softest throwing. He would be probably the softest throwing closer in the sport. I haven't looked it up, but he's probably up there for sure.
It feels pretty like a pretty safe assumption to say that. Yeah. I don't think you're that wrong on that.
Yeah. And so I don't know. I think it's just him trying to, hey, pitchers and catchers report in 10 days. I don't have a job yet. So I need somewhere to go.
Here's my big concern with Lance Lynn as a closer is you only have so much time to get to the mound before the inning starts and they assess you with a ball. This man is 6'5", 280. Do we really think he's going to hustle from the bullpen to the mound? We're going to have to bring back bullpen carts, which I'm okay. I love bullpen carts. I love a good bullpen cart. I'm fine with a bullpen cart. I think Washington still has one, but like, Lance Lynn, buddy, you don't want to be that dude. You don't want to sign up to have to run out from the bullpen 3 times a week. Have you thought this through, buddy? You don't want to do this, man. No, okay. See, here's the thing. He's got 6 pitches. None of them, other than the fastball, really graded out as an okay pitch last year, right? I mean, the 4-seamer allowed a 199 batting average against. Okay, that's great. The rest of them, the cutter allowed a 317. The sinker allowed a 284. The changeup allowed a 292. Like, what are we doing here, man? I don't know. I agree with you. I think the better role for Lance Lynn is some sort of back-end starter. He can eat innings. He can mentor your young guys. There are some places that make sense that need competency in the back end of the rotation. Whether it's, I understand why you wouldn't want to sign a veteran because you want your young guys to get experience, but I do think if you bring a Lance Lynn into the Angels, into even the White Sox, right? Give him a chance with no pressure to pitch and see if he can be good enough to get flipped at the deadline. Let him mentor all the young guys you have on the team. It just, Lance Lynn as a closer, what? We're going to go, like, would you rather face Emmanuel Clase in 99 mile an hour cutters or Lance Lynn in 89 mile an hour cutters? Like, I don't, it doesn't, I think you're right. He just wants a job as spring training's getting here.
Yeah, for sure. And that's hilarious, imagining Lance Lynn sprinting from the bullpen. I mean, it was like that other reliever a few years ago. He's retired now, and I cannot think of his name. But and he was on the Phillies at one point.
The Philly guy. Yeah, and like JT Realmuto was like, I can't believe you're doing this. And then he's all gassed, and he walked like three straight dudes because he's gassed.
Yeah. So
like, what are you doing, man?
And that would be Lance Lynn, because I feel like he would be trying to prove that this old man can still got it. I can still run, and that would be the most cardio he'd get all day for a week.
Yeah, just it's nuts. Okay, talking about old guys who kind of don't have jobs right now. We mentioned this the other day about the Dodgers having too many good players. They DFA'd Ryan Brazier to make space for Kirby Yates. Brazier 1-0. His ERA since he went to LA was 3 and change. He was actually, I think he was DFA'd by the Red Sox. They picked him up. They gave him a cutter. They stuck him in the pen. He became a very good reliever. Through 28 innings last year, 0.96 whip. 3.54 ERA for the Dodgers. It's like a slider, four-seam, sinker, cutter profile. So a lot of power in there. How over under on the number of teams who claim Ryan Brazier? I'm going to give you a line of 7.5.
Ooh, 7.5. I am gonna say under. I think it's gonna be around the five. I think it's gonna be around the 5 or 6 mark. And I still wouldn't be surprised if I'm wrong and it's over, because there's a lot of teams like to load up on the bullpen, especially after the Dodgers have done it, and you've seen the Mets do it, and
the Padres did it at the deadline last year.
Yeah, and right. there are still other contending teams that need help in the bullpen, like the Philadelphia Phillies, who could be one of the teams that try to claim him. So it's going to be a lot for sure.
Yeah, and just kind of a reminder on how this works: it'll go by the claim order, and which is kind of set by record last year and things like that. But a team can jump that by offering an asset to the Dodgers and doing a minor trade, right? Cash considerations, which is limited to $500,000. You can do IFA pool space if you have any left. Obviously, they're signing Sasaki. They need as much pool space as they can get. You could do a lower level prospect. They would want somebody, obviously, not on the 40-man roster or not anywhere close to the 40-man roster. So just some thoughts there on you're going to see probably a trade, and then we'll get the reporting out later about how many guys made a claim for Ryan Brazier. Again, the over-under we had here was 7.5. Troy said under. I'm saying over. I think at least 8 teams will make a claim. You know, just under 1/3 of the league will make a claim on Ryan Brazier. Okay, the big story that we have to get to, the only not old guy in this show, John Hammond of the New York Post is reporting that the New York Mets are pursuing Dylan Cease or Michael King from the Padres in a trade. If you want more info on these two guys, by the way, the Wednesday episode of Braves Today, I spent a whole segment breaking down Cease, a whole segment breaking down King, so you can go watch that. Again, Braves Today podcast, wherever you get your podcasts. That's Wednesday's show. But this is something where the Padres don't have to trade either of these guys, right? But they are in their final year of team control before free agency. The Mets are in on this. Obviously, the Braves are reportedly in on Cease as well. They tried to get him when he originally was traded from the White Sox, said that the deal was too expensive. Which of these pitchers do you see moving, and which of those two teams or a surprise team do you see jumping in and getting him?
I do think it's going to be Dylan Cease that's on the move, just because the trade talks have surrounded him much more than Michael King, but I don't think he's going to go to the Mets. I could see Dylan Cease going to the Atlanta Braves just because the Atlanta Braves have already tried to get him, like you said, went back when the White Sox traded him. And honestly, he's a better fit with the Atlanta Braves and what the team that they consistently build year in and year out throughout the history of their organization. And he would be a good fit there and would tremendously help that rotation that's already a fantastic unit.
Yeah, there's some pros and cons there for Atlanta if they go and get Dylan Cease. Obviously, one of the pros, he fits the demographic of the guys that like to sign the extensions with Atlanta. He's from Milton, Georgia, went to high school there. I did this for the Wednesday Braves show. From the steps of City Hall at Milton in Milton, Georgia, to the gate of Truist Park, it's like 20.2 miles. So close by, he literally could go, like, could sleep at his parents' house and then wake up and drive to the ballpark if he wanted to. Who would do that? But you could, right? But at the same time, he's a Scott Boras guy. And they do sometimes sign extensions, right? Matt Chapman signed an extension, but he was in a different situation because he had signed a short-term deal with a high AAV after not finding the fit in free agency and then signed an extension to stay there. Whereas Cease, obviously, is heading into free agency for the first time after 2025. Michael King is also an interesting fit there, too, simply because from a money perspective, he's not as expensive. I think his arbitration or his deal they reached to avoid arbitration is just over $8 million. Cease is like 12 or 14 or something like that. And King has not as long of a track record in the majors, hasn't posted like Cease has. Cease has, kind of like Morton, Cease has just racked up at least 30 something starts every single year for the last like four or whatever. But I do think it's interesting that both of them are potentially on the move. We've seen a lot of reports out of San Diego about the front office turmoil that they're facing with the ownership lawsuit ever since Peter Seidler died and things like that. It's cost cutting. And I guess they'd rather trade him now and get assets for him than to let him leave in free agency and at best only get a compensatory pick. Is there a mystery team you think would swoop in and grab one of those guys? Max Chaos. Who would be the funniest outcome to go get one of those dudes?
Oh, the funniest outcome would if the White Sox traded for Dylan Cease again.
Get him back.
That would be awesome.
I guess maybe like realistic, somebody who might actually do it. I think a really funny one would be Dylan Cease going to the Cubs.
Yeah, that'd be nice.
Like, you were in Chicago, you got traded to the West Coast, and we're bringing you back to Chicago, but the better one of the two teams. And it would be one of those like all-in moves for the Cubs. They got Kyle Tucker to be their battleship this year. And then they go around and their aircraft carrier, that's the expression. And then bring in Dylan Cease to be in that rotation along with Shota Imanaga and Tyone and Steele. It'd be a damn good rotation. Probably the best rotation outside. The best National League rotation outside of the Dodgers, the Braves, and the Phillies, I'd argue right there if you did that.
Oh, yeah, for sure. That would be a fantastic fit. I think that the team that needs more than any other team in baseball, the team that absolutely needs to get a deal done for either Dylan Cease or Michael King is the Baltimore Orioles, because they still don't have a true ace in their rotation. Like, we've talked about it a lot, but Zach Eflin is their ace right now, or Grayson Rodriguez, and neither of them are a true ace. At least Grayson Rodriguez isn't at this point in his career.
Yeah, he might be down the line. He could be.
But Zach Eflin, we already know Zach Eflin's not a true ace. And so the Orioles still need to go out and get a true ace, especially with all the moves that the Blue Jays have made this offseason. I was looking at it before we came on today, and I'm coming around on the Blue Jays, man. I honestly think they might have overtaken the Orioles on paper for this year.
Hang on. I want to do this real quick. We're going to pull up Fangraphs live. We have a couple extra minutes here because there wasn't a lot of stuff that happened yesterday, guys. We're going to do this real quick. We're going to pull up the Blue Jays, and I want to talk about this team because I think you're right. We're all kind of sleeping a little bit on what this team can do. So as of right now, like, if you think about, they got rid of Spencer Horwitz. Traded first baseman Spencer Horwitz. And so, like, their losses, Genesis Cabrera, Ryan Yarbrough, Jordan Romano, and Spencer Horwitz. But they added Max Scherzer in the rotation, Jeff Hoffman as a reliever, not a starter, Yimi Garcia, Nick Sandlin as relievers, Anthony Santander as a slugger, play some outfield, move to DH, and Andre Jimenez, who's now going to be the second baseman, and if they lose Bo Bichette, can switch over to shortstop. So, position player group, what is the weakness of this team right now in the position player group? Because I kind of think it's with Dalton Varsho not expected to be ready to start the season because of the rotator cuff surgery. I kind of want to say it's outfield defense and if the underperformance continues into 2025, it feels like, Bo Bichette was bad, all the injuries he had last year, but it feels like outfield defense is probably your biggest weakness. And then the underperformance some guys had. George Springer had like a 95 WRC plus, not a good defender in right for this point in his career. Santander is not a great defender in left. Nathan Lukes is not really going to probably going to hit that well in center. So it kind of feels like the outfield's your weakness right now.
Yeah. Especially, like you said, especially with Dalton Varsho missing part of the start of the season after having rotator cuff surgery, it's got to be the outfield defense because, I mean, while Bo Bichette did struggle in 2024, you got to expect he's going to turn things around again in 2025 and be at least somewhat closer, especially in a contract year. I mean,
he's been close to 300 every year of his career, except for all his injuries. I mean, I'm not banking on that happening again.
Yeah, and it's a contract year, and we've already talked about how guys overperform in contract years, but it's the infield defense with the addition of Andre Jimenez is outstanding because you've got Vladimir Guerrero Jr., who's won a gold glove. You've got Andre Jimenez at second base. And
I'm pretty sure Jimenez has won a gold glove, yeah.
I think Jimenez has won a platinum glove, if I'm not mistaken. I could be wrong on that, but he's one of, if not the best defensive second baseman in the sport. I know that. And the Bo Bichette at short, and then
23, he won the platinum glove, and he's won three consecutive gold gloves, 22, 23, and 24. And he won the platinum in 23. You're right. Good call.
Yeah. And so it's the infield defense is outstanding. And then we already talked about Max Scherzer, but having him at the back end of the rotation in a rotation that includes Bo and Francis. It's a good unit.
It's an old rotation, but with the exception of Alton Francis, but listen to this rotation: Kevin Gausman, Jose Berrios, Chris Bassett, Max Scherzer, Alton Francis. That's not a bad 1-5. That's really not a bad 1-5.
Yeah, for sure. And especially if you can get 100-120 innings out of Max Scherzer at a lower than 4 ERA at the back end of your rotation, that's a solid unit. That's one of the best in the American League East.
Yeah. I do think when Dalton Varsho comes back, it gives you a lot of other options, right? You can move Lukes you can move Lukes to a different corner. You can put Santander back in right and let Springer DH, things like that. The bullpen is interesting here. Jeff Hoffman now is the new closer. You've got Chad Green, Yimi Garcia, Eric Swanson. Yariel Rodriguez is your long man. They signed him as a free agent out of Japan last year. Didn't really work in the rotation a lot, or didn't really have a lot of success in the rotation last year, but he's kind of your swing man, can be your sixth starter. The issue that I have with this team is this farm system is not good. And I don't really feel like you have a lot of help coming. There's a lot of injuries from your pitchers. Ricky Tiedemann's never really been healthy in his career. It just feels like, Brandon Barrera, a lot of these starting pitching depth guys have been hurt. And their 40-man roster is surprisingly empty after the major league level. They only have two catchers on the 40-man roster. There's not, there's no third guy. They invited a bunch of guys to spring training. You have to have a lot of catchers in spring training anyway, but they invited a lot of those guys. They have just a couple infielders on their 40-man rosters, no backup shortstops on their 40-man roster. It's just kind of, feels like a lot of these guys are those players that can do a couple different positions, but nobody does it that well. Davis Schneider can play a bunch of places, but I don't feel like he's really that good at any of them, right? It's an odd roster with a bunch of jacks of all trades outside of the stars, and they're going to have to be carried by the studs in Vlad Guerrero, and Santander is going to have to hit in Bichette, and they're going to have to be carried by the pitching. And I worry that with an old rotation like this, Bassett's almost 36. Scherzer's 40. Even Gosman's in his upper 30s with a hell of a workload in his career. I just worry they're not going to be able to make it to keep going in the National or in the American League East long enough to get to the postseason and still be effective enough to make noise.
Yeah, no, that's definitely a good point. They're going to have to hope and pray that they have a tremendous bill of health throughout the 2025 season. But I think that if they are capable of all staying healthy, then I think that on paper they've overtaken the Orioles with what they've done this offseason, and they're going to give the Yankees a run for their money, because especially with the rotation, if that rotation stays healthy, one through five, I do think that's a better unit than the Yankees have, because I still think the Yankees rotation is extremely top heavy. So they're going to be real. If they can stay healthy, they'll be real contenders in the American League East this year.
Yeah. This has been First Pitch for Friday, January 31st. Back on Monday with you. In the meantime, you're listening on audio, do us a favor, leave us a 5-star review. If you're on YouTube, subscribe to the channel, hit the notification bell. And either way, go to Twitter and tell Troy how funny he looks without a mustache, since he shaved just the mustache but not the beard. Until next time, this has been First Pitch.